This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Welcome to Red Ice Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren. Glad to have you with us today, and thank you for your interest and for taking the time to listen and hopefully learn something new. This is the program where we focus on all the things that we consider to be both interesting and important. We span wide across the information spectrum. If you're joining us for the first time, our website is RedIceCreations.com, where you can enjoy over a year of radio for free right there on the website. Stream or download, subscribe to our RSS feeds, and sign up for our newsletter. We also have TV programs and a very busy news section. In our members area, we have our full archives of radio going back to 2006, including films, presentations, video interviews, webcasts, audio commentary, and more. Today we have a special two-hour program for you, together with Christer Johansson, on the topic of the abduction of his son Dominic Johansson by the Swedish social services. A horrible story that shatters the myth about a social utopia that Sweden has been promoted as. Stay with us for much more. Okay, welcome to Red Ice Radio. It's very good to have you with us, Christer Johansson. Thank you, first of all, for taking the time coming on the program. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet, Christer. And we have also with us Annie, the mother, or your wife, Christer, on the line as well. Hi, Annie. How are you today?
Not so good, but I'm here with Christer.
Absolutely. It's good to know that you're there, and I know that you won't be joining us for the whole program here today. For obvious reasons, you have difficulty talking about this and hearing about this, but I just thought it was a good idea anyway to just say hi to you in the beginning. You know, so we appreciate that, and all I want to say is stay, you know, brave, and thank you for your work that you've done on you know, to raise this issue to the forefront so far. Yeah. You know, I know it hasn't been that successful yet, but you know, we'll see what we can do here. We're all in this together in that sense. So thank you for that, Annie.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
You bet. So let's do this then. Obviously, we need to run through some of the background and some of the details here, Christer, in the beginning, for those who haven't heard about this story. And the obvious reasons why we're focusing on this, why I've chosen to focus on this as well, bring attention to this, is because you always hear this myth, in a sense, of Scandinavia and Sweden in particular, that this is a incredibly humanitarian system that we live under, and the fact that we are one of the top countries when it comes to, you know, regarding human rights and everything else. So this is a little bit about bringing attention to this area, basically claiming that this is not as black and white as the rest of the media, and in some cases, even the rest of the world is trying to portray this issue, because there's a lot more happening in this country than what we hear about. So this is a very important case, obviously, for that reason. But give us the background first, Christer. Go as far back as you need to, obviously, to lay the background, if you will, of what happened to you and to your son, obviously.
Well, as sad as it may sound, it's a normal story. When you finally ask for help, the system is there to help. We all pay for that. And I thought the society was some kind of kind machine that everybody taught me in the beginning, that if you have any problems, just ask for it, and it's no problem. And Annie and I, first of all, I have been living with childhood trauma my entire life that was missed totally. So I've had my experience with that before as well. And then when we got traumatized, both Annie and me, pretty well down in India back in 2001, we had to skip everything that we had planned, and we had to go back and restart a little, whatever. We didn't think much about anything at that time, just to go home and take it a little easy. We were robbed, and there were earthquakes in India, and we lost quite a bit of money.
And just to clarify for our listeners, Annie, who we talked with here briefly, comes from India originally, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We married back in 2000, and when we came back to Sweden, The first thing I did was to do nothing, because this is how trauma works. You are shut down in a way. When I finally came to my senses a little bit, the sick insurance company has disabled my sick insurance, so I was standing on what we call here in Sweden existence minimum. At that time, we had no home, we had no work, no nothing, so we had this existential minimum, and our son was on the way to be born. So you get a little panicked when nothing is working and you're standing on almost ground zero. What I did was to contact the psychiatric clinic. I tried to talk to the sick insurance company first, but they weren't interested in changing any decisions. So we had a problem for sure. I went to the psychiatric clinic and I told them everything that happened. And Annie stayed home because she was pregnant. And as far as I can remember, there were no reaction towards anything that I said. It's like, okay, you have a troublesome life. Do you want pills or do you want electric shocks?
Yeah, great. Yeah.
And I feel that electric shocks is not even legal in war, so why should I take it in a mode of peace, so to say?
Yep.
So I said that, well, I don't need either medicine or electric shocks. I need help to be able to stand again. And they asked, what do you need help with? Well, if I knew that, I wouldn't have come here. So I need to straighten things out, and I need to get back to normal and get a job and all this. But there was a doctor, he has ADHD himself. He prescribed very, very funny pills. Seroxat, that's an SSRI pill like any other, and Seroxat is one of the worst. And usually you should start with 10 to 15 milligrams. I started with 60. From there, I hardly remember much.
So this is back in 2001 still, correct?
Yeah, 2001, yeah. 2002. I'm not sure because I can look at the dates on the papers, but okay, I don't remember much. So, and the first thing that happened with this medicine was I sat down like a zombie and I cried for help, of course, because I didn't know what was happening to me. So I called the psychiatric clinic again and I told them about my problems and stuff like that. But they weren't interested in really finding out what was going on. So they recommended me one more pill. So then I had 80 milligrams, and according to FUS, 50 milligrams was the high dosage, max dosage before, and now it's 50 or 60 somewhere. I'm not sure. So to be a little bit sensitive and go on with 80 milligrams of a whacked medicine, well, you are in mental problems because of that. That's what I feel today. I didn't have so many problems, but I got them.
Yeah, we hear these stories all the time, and the pills, as we know, those who know about the dangers of SSRIs know how detrimental they are, and the true effects on the human spirit in that sense, that it totally flatlines you in terms of emotional states. And granted, you might not feel any depression, but most they still actually do, though. But you don't feel any ups either. Don't feel a happy time either. It just totally flatlines you. And this is the how the scientific dictatorship, as I like to call it, takes care of business in that sense. They give you a pill for everything. But go ahead, Krista.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I was recommended up to 8 different kind of pills, so I know that drill. If it doesn't work with one, just put the other one and the next one and the next one, and the dialogue never starts, actually. You never start to talk about what's the core problem, because as I see it, there is no... I mean, people are complaining about alcoholics and drug users and stuff, but the problem is not the drugs. The problem is not the alcohol or the pills. The problem is still the same thing always. It's the basic to why this all happened.
Absolutely. The psychology of the person who has the addiction. The addiction is there for a reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but I figured no matter what I said, nobody was really there to listen, because it doesn't get personal on any level. It's just like, it's a very fun experience, because I heard one thing and then I experienced something totally different.
Yep.
So instead of asking for more help, I was addicted to both the Seroxat and one of these sleeping pills that are quite strong as well. And I asked for help, but nobody was there. They just didn't care.
Yeah.
So I took care of everything myself. And this is 2003, 4 something. And this is the thing that social services is using today. My mental state back in 2003. And doctors' opinions of me when I was totally whacked down with both medicine, trauma and shock, and post-traumatic stress. So this is what they're using, first of all. I feel that it doesn't have anything to do with today's date. And during the time, I didn't have any problems with being a wacko in any sense, actually. I just had to stay very calm and have a peaceful day, because trauma can only be cured with one thing. You have to have peace and quiet.
Yeah.
And a lot of, the more family, the better.
That's right.
So Annie and I, we fixed it. We were talking a lot. We were reading a lot on the web. I use every natural remedy there is out there. And finally, I was back to somewhat normal 2006 or something.
And had you begun going slowly off the pills at that point, or did you like stop short?
Yeah, I tried to just lower the dosage, but nothing seemed to work no matter what I did. So finally, I just decided that it's me who's going to decide what's going to happen, or the effect of the pills. So I started to get a little bit nervous. So I just threw them out of the window. And I had a lot of friends and my wife and everybody who helped me. And I just worked through it. Mm-hmm. There was nothing else, either quit or die.
Yeah.
So, and this is, you die spiritually when you take these SSRI pills. That's what I can explain, the best explanation I can hand over.
Absolutely, yeah.
So being born very spiritual, and today you call spiritual people highly sensitive person, I believe.
Hmm.
That's a new concept within the psychiatric field. It's pretty interesting, because all of a sudden they have discovered that some people are more sensitive than others. So that's positive.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good in that sense. I guess they still try to classify people who have a spiritual life, though, as not as a disease, maybe, but the fact that it's just like a side effect of something in the brain, which is, you know, scary from my point of view. But go ahead, Christer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Far away from the norm, or even thinking outside the box, is very dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Well, it's all about conformity. And by the way, this is obviously the healthcare system that has been promoted around the world as well, the free healthcare system of Scandinavia. There's so much that's gone downhill, of course, and so many points of critique that we can raise about this issue. But I'm going to let you go ahead first, Christian, and talk about the story. So go ahead.
Hmm. I believe 2006 was Annie got a threat from one person who was working within the system. He was recommended by social services to help us, but the only problem I had actually was the pills, because I couldn't. It's like you don't have control over your own life. So whenever anybody asked what kind of help I want, well, first of all, we have these pills. But this person who was supposed to help, he didn't help. And I finally told him that if you can't try to help me, then try to help Annie or whatever. Because you want to function normally and stuff like that. So if they offer help, then please help. But he didn't. So he called one night and he said that he's going to take Annie to India and Dominic as well. And I'm totally crazy, and Annie should be very careful where I am, and she shouldn't tell me that she was packing, and she should just stay ready and be transported to India soon. And
so they try to split you up in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. And they were recommending, we are involved with the social services now and then, because it seems like whenever you get involved with them, either you call back or they will call back. As soon as you have a journal there, they will be there. So every now and then there is a phone call or there is a letter or whatever. And I don't know what happened after that. And yeah, we moved out to my parents back in 2006, because we reported this to the police that Annie was threatened to leave the country, and then nothing happened.
Okay, but just to clarify one more thing, when was Dominic born? Is there?
He was born September 9, 2001.
2001, okay, yep, just want to make sure we had that. Okay, so he's about 5 at this time.
Yeah.
Like that. Yep.
And as I've tried to explain for the social services so many times, just because I have a little mental issues going on in my head doesn't mean that I do something strange in real life. I mean, that's what I feel this is all about. Just because somebody has a little mental issues, he's a wacko. But this was not the case. We actually had a good life to 2006. We had everything was going pretty well. I was getting more and more healthy, and it was getting back to normal, because trauma takes years to heal from. Then the social services came, I believe summer 2006. I've started a little project called the Vaken Village. We wanted to gather and see if we could start a community, or maybe we wanted to move to a different country, whatever. I wanted to work with alternative technology and stuff like that. So everything, mm-hmm. one thing led to the other. And as soon as the social services saw that they're doing something different, they were there in just a few moments with 4 policemen. And this was just another new trauma for us, because you don't have so much to say in these situations. You have people coming to your house and they're asking a lot of questions, and you know, deep down in the subconscious, you know, if I answer wrong, I'm going to get in trouble. Because that's what life has turned into in this social... everybody is saying it, never ask for help. And if they come to your house, then just pet them. Just agree with everything. But I'm not born in that belief. I don't believe that is the way that we should live, because if we are divided in 2 groups in society, one is called the system, the other one is called human beings, we have to be able to speak clear. Yep. And honest to each other. Otherwise, that's it's right. Not going to work.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So this is from their perspective, in a sense, then, just because you had ended up in this situation where you needed help for a duration of, you know, your life, a small period of this, they now have their eye on you for whatever reason. And they think, because of this little deviant, if I can put it that way, behavior, and because of your decisions with your son, they are now coming home to you and basically asking... You telling you to do certain things, or asking you why you're doing certain things. That is that correct?
Yeah, most of the time they're asking why, and they're recommending. Well, Dominic has to go to this school, and Dominic has to go to this daycare, and he has to be vaccinated. And
right,
and I've been talking about this with doctors since Dominic was born. He's not gonna get vaccinated. Period. It is a free choice. It's not. According to the law, you cannot use any law against us. So please respect our choice. And if we have any trouble, we will call you.
That's right.
As in every other situation. But it took several years before they stopped to call about the vaccines. But then to get back to 2006, when they were here, they that ended up in a investigation, and as I have been open for any alternative remedies out there. I've been in contact with medical cannabis as well, and that was a huge problem for them.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. But I'm going to come to that later as well. But this time, this investigation, they made one, and they talked to us. They talked to Dominic. They asked us to go to the BVC, the child doctor, and we did all these things. And Dominic was healthy fully, and according to the BVC report, he has been healthy since day one.
Since the time he was born.
So, and we have never ever went to the doctor because of any diseases or anything, because he has been healthy all the time. I've been very clear to done my best to give him natural vitamins and stuff like that, proper food, not so much candy and aspartame and fluoride and all this. So,
right, yep. Mm. Which is so okay for everybody else to get, but yep, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So the investigation 2006 ended up in Dominic is fully healthy, physical, and he's mentally like a seven-year-old when he's five. That's what they told us. So, and the investigation about Annie and me was totally okay. There was nothing wrong, even though I had been in contact with medical cannabis before that. So I asked them, are we done now, more or less? And there were no problems. And we continued with our project, but we had cars running outside our house now and then, very slowly. People were looking inside stuff like that. So we had an eye on them because we know they were checking us out.
Okay.
And then after a year or so, we moved to our own house. We rented a house. And it took about 2 months, and the social services sent us letters and mails, and they called on the phone. So it started to feel like no matter what we do or say, they are always going to be here. So I felt like if we're going to travel somewhere, then we're going to travel somewhere before Dominic starts school and all that, whatever we are going to do. I wanted to homeschool. That was the first thought. But then we went to a couple of schools, we went to a couple of different daycares, but he was very stressed out. It was too noisy, it was too, just too much everything. He has been brought up in a pretty stress-free environment, so I understand him. That was my first feeling also when I went to school.
Yeah.
You won't. So we decided pretty quick to go to India. And we just called... wherever you need to call, we call the regular education board,
right,
in Stockholm, and I just told them what I'm going to do. We're going to travel out, but we need some homeschooling material because I wanted to have something on the way, and then just in case we need to go back, then whatever. So it was just a safety. But and they said that totally okay. You can you just call the principal where your school supposed to where your son is supposed to go to school, and it's his responsibility to give us the material. And that is how I understand society as well. You ask for help when you need it, and they provide because that's what we pay tax for.
Right.
So I called him, and he was a little bit strange first time, and I believe I missed a letter from him. We ended up in a dispute. He was telling me that it doesn't matter if you go to India, it doesn't matter what you plan at all, your son has to go to school, period. And I was trying to discuss with him a few articles from the declaration or whatever, but he was not aware of any rights, no nothing. He even told me to shove my rights somewhere. So I thought that this is not going nowhere, so I need to wait until this reaches the next level. And it came to the local, what do you call it, Barn- and the local education board, or whatever to call
right,
it.
Yeah.
And they didn't even want to listen to what I had to say. They were in tune already with Dominic is going to go to school no matter what you say. He's going to go to school because that's the law. And I told them that, well, the law is not to be used to break human rights. So here, first of all, I'm going to give you a letter with a lot of rights and from the Constitution as well. But that didn't work. So I sent a letter to the newspaper and I told them that I am actually in control when it comes to the education, because first of all, it's in the Declaration. Then second, it's my child, period.
Yeah.
My child, my family, so step away. But they didn't want to take a meeting to listen to us, so what to do? So we continued to try to talk to them for a number of months, and I thought that if we leave right now and come back later, we'll be in more trouble. So I thought that better fight this out first. But you can't fight with somebody if they don't answer you.
Right.
I mean, at least they have to see what I'm writing and reply to the messages and answer the questions. But there was no one there. It was just one way from the beginning. Dominic has to go to school. So finally, Dominic was kind of he started to get a little show some stress. Annie was more or less collapsing because she has read about Sweden before, she has heard about Sweden before, but never did she believe that she cannot leave the country she's visiting to go home. If you do that, then, I mean, they're going to take your child away from you and put it to school. I mean, where's the family in all this?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So finally, Annie collapsed and was sent to the emergency. This was in May 2009. So even before this kidnapping, she was transported to the ER because she stopped to breathe and her heart stopped temporarily. And I have friends who witnessed this, and we went away to the hospital, and after that we went to a court hearing about homeschooling. And what I did, so many people say that you have to have a lawyer and you cannot speak about rights and stuff in the court. The only thing I brought to the court was the Declaration of Human Rights, and I pointed out in an article where it says that the parents has the most to say about what kind of education your son or child should have. And I said that it says here, I have the last to say about this. So we won the case. It took 40 minutes only. And then 6 weeks after that, we were about to go to India, headed for the airport. We have had a couple of phone calls between the hearing and traveling. Social services called up and said that we are going to do one more investigation. At that time, I was pretty tired, and I said, give it a rest. Please stop. Just stop it. You have been after us for years. You have investigated us. You have done everything. Now we have said hi to everybody, and we're just going to leave. So respect that. And they said that, okay, we'll close the investigation. That was the last thing they told us. But still on the airport, I had the feeling as well as I didn't feel safe until we had left the ground. And I was right, because when we were about to tax out, I mean, if you've done something wrong, if you've done something illegal, you can't go through the pass, whatever to call it. If you show your passport on an airport, and if you have done something wrong, of course you're not going to travel away. So we had not done anything wrong. We were just on our way, and they stopped the plane and they told us that we have orders to take your son if you leave Sweden. And they said that after 10 minutes. They took us away from the middle of the plane and they kept us in front of the plane. Everybody in the plane was so quiet. And what I feel that, first of all,
You don't step onto a plane dressed as a police officer today if it's not serious, because you will scare the heck out of everybody.
Right.
Mm. So even we got a little spooked, and Dominic also, I could see on his face that he knew that something was going on, but I told him that calm down, we're going to find out what this is all about. But I had a gut feeling, and I was right. Outside the plane, they took us further on to the local station there at Arlanda Airport, and no one said anything. And then I started to speak about, well, we have had troubles with the social services for a long time, and I want to have a few questions answered. I want something. But everybody was quiet. So we waited for 5-10 more minutes, and I don't remember if it was a woman or a man who entered the room and said that social services want to talk to your son for 5-10 minutes. Is that okay? So I thought, well, perhaps they believe that we are beating him or anything, so maybe they just want to check him.
Right.
So we have nothing to hide. Please talk to him, check him, do whatever. And after that, he never came back.
Wow.
Mm. And the few days when this happens, I got a totally different picture of Sweden than I was taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First of all, the policeman, when Annie fell down to the ground, she has already collapsed before. And as a social worker, you should check the medical records of any person that you have planned to take a child from, because this kind of trauma is, I have a few things to compare with, but there is no comparison to what happens with you in this situation.
Yeah, of course. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So Annie, she fell down to the floor, and the police just stared at us. One of them ran away and got a, he got a pillow from a sofa or whatever. And by the time he was back, I have already restarted her. I massaged, what do you call that? Mouth to mouth and massaging her.
CPR, yeah. to try to, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So luckily I've read a few books about the subject, so I managed to recover her. And they kept a pillow under her head, checked if she was breathing, and then they said, it's okay, she's breathing. So nothing wrong. She totally collapsed. She died on the spot, and they were just checking the breathing. It's okay. So then I asked the police that, can you please call anybody, because now we can't even walk 2 meters. What's going to happen now? You've taken her son. My wife is totally devastated. She doesn't even know where she is. But then they said the social services has provided you with a boat ticket back to Gotland. Maybe sound a little kind and so, but we have to travel quite far to get to the terminal to begin with, and we could hardly walk 5 meters. So yeah, I said, yeah, that's not okay. If you take our son and leave us here without anything, we don't even know where the luggage is, you're going to get us a plane ticket to Gotland, because now we need a lawyer. But and the policeman, he went away and he called the social services again, and he was so right when he came back, and he said it was cold in the other end of the phone. It's only a boat ticket.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So from there, it was the next day after that, they laid down their complaints, and they said that somebody sent an anonymous letter. And I told them that somebody have sent anonymous letters for years. Why don't you look into that instead, who that is, or why somebody is trying to hurt us? I mean, you do the checkups. Then you come back again with a new anonymous letter. I mean, we are not here to live your worries. We are here to live our own life. Mm. So I had my brother with me. Annie was there. And we got a lawyer without asking for it at the meeting the next day. we haven't heard, we haven't slept anything, no nothing, but we cleared all the accusations. And for the rest of the stuff that they have that is documented, it's in some journal or whatever, what does it mean today? You were supposed to be there years back to really help us when we asked for the help, but now you're taking our child because somebody had a hunch or sent a letter or whatever. What is this all about? Then they said that we're going to return Dominic to you on Monday, or he's going to be at your brother's place during the investigation. So they still wanted to do an investigation. So we said, okay, that's no problem, because if my son is at my brother's place, he's still with family. So I felt that would be pretty okay.
Better than some of the other options there, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I tried this thing that work with them. Everybody is saying it. Work with them. It's impossible if you go against them. Okay, I will try to work with you. After checking him for a couple of more days, they found cavity on his teeth, and we had been to the dentist 2 times already, and he had to go and fix 1 more tooth. And because of that they found cavity, that was just another reason, because then they would not leave Dominic back to us again.
A cavity in the tooth, huh? That's high up on the list of worry elements. Like, kids don't have cavities. Go ahead, Christer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so silly. He had two milky teeth with cavity, and there was 1 more after everything went on. They had to fix 1 tooth, that is, of his normal tooth and teeth.
Yeah.
But they told us that you're not going to get Dominic back because he has cavity on the teeth. And Annie fell down again.
And she's having these regular panic attacks. That's what you're saying. She can't handle this emotionally, of course.
No. It's overload long time back, yep, because we have been treated so bad for so long. So,
yep.
I mean, they have asked her 5 or 6 times to divorce me. And Annie is asking me, why do they ask to divorce you? Are you crazy? What? No, I'm not more crazy than what you can see. So, that's the way they have been treating us.
Mm.
And
wanted to ask as well, because I heard this story elsewhere. Even Dominic obviously had a reaction on the plane, correct? When the police took him, basically. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I saw him shut down a little, and I saw that he was very worried. He said something like, okay, what's up this time? It's like he knew that, okay, somebody is going to be a bully again. But then right after they took him, he started to throw up, and he didn't stop to throw up. They had to take him to the ER. And when somebody throws up so much, so you can't get them to stop, first of all, that's psychological torture and one of the most severe I've heard of. And if you have to take a child to the ER, it's kind of severe. And what happens after that is severe post-traumatic stress and trauma as well. And obviously, he was sick. For 6 months after that, he was always some kind of, he needed to blow his nose, cough, nervous, rashes, and all these things. And I can't believe how people can take tax money and call this work and then scare the shit out of a family and destroy a little boy's life for the rest of his life, because this is not going to be easy to cure. I've seen him be self-confident and happy, calm, down to being nothing, and he's just looking at everybody like he doesn't want to answer any questions. He looks around himself and, okay, let's see what the adult says. Like, they have told him that we know what's best and all this crap. I don't know what to call it.
But mm-hmm.
So that's the that is what happens a little until the kidnapping. And then the work that what comes after this with all the hearings and stuff, that's I would call it even worse.
Why? Why is it worse for you emotionally? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I thought there were something called justice and truth and moral and ethics, but obviously that's not the case when it comes to dealing with LVU cases, as they are called, because there is something else going on there. It's first of all, everybody who is involved in these cases, they don't have a clue what a trauma is. And if you don't know that, if you have to deal with traumatized people, and what you deal with, the case is about reminding them of what has happened all the time. So it's pretty clinical psychiatric torture that's going on.
Yeah.
And all this nonsense that I'm hearing about, there are no human rights in Sweden. One police officer even told me that, and I reminded him a couple of months after that, you should think twice about what you're saying, because right now the parliament is working to implement rights, and everybody's working to implement rights, but I don't see that over here. As far as I have seen, something that is discriminated to the most is human rights. I mean, if you mention them to a lawyer or whatever, it's like you're telling them that you have a disease or whatever. It's strange.
Very strange. do you think on some level that some of the people involved that they think that they're actually doing the right thing in this case? Or is it something else going on? I'm trying to get to what the motive is in one sense. If this is a factor when they're trying to maybe go after you for some reason, or if there's something else going on here. What do you think, Krister?
I believe, first of all, I've been spoken pretty openly about human rights, and that everybody has to be responsible, and even. I threw a few stones at the politicians and stuff. Hey, shape up your work. But then I believe there is something that I'm starting to understand now. If you just have a party and you just watch TV and you go and do some shopping and you believe that the regular media is going to teach you anything important, you will not know enough to be able to be a social worker, because for me a social worker has to be very wide when it comes to knowledge about different cultures and religions, then have a great deal of understanding what happens with trauma and family loss, all these things. But what I see is somebody who is very scared, who only know one version of life, and they're trying to force that on other people. And then there is the second thing that I'm starting to see also. The more we go to the court about this, the more lawyers and judges are going to earn. So it's quite simple.
It's true. This is, in a sense, what's called a service economy. They generate money out of nothing, in a sense, by just pushing these papers around. Swedes are in such a daze when it comes to some of these issues, and most people, as you say, are just striving to kind of adhere to the rules that are set for them in the little playpen. Conformity, that's the name of the game. And if you, in any sense, trying to just go slightly outside of that box, you know, you pretty quickly understand that that's something that's going to be problematic or difficult to do, in a sense. Anything that has to do with some kind of you know, alternative options, or even some of the things that you mentioned before about maybe having a naturopath to try to cure, you know, some of your ailments that you have physically or mentally, for that matter too. When you're trying to maybe have a incorporation of East meets West medicine, for instance, this is very, very It's very, very backwards in Sweden in those regards, and I don't think many people around the world or even in Sweden, here themselves, know about these things because they never encounter these aspects within the system.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's so silly to this thing. Some people, they joke about it. Take a guru from India, and he will be. He will be liked for the one he is in India, but put him in New York and he will have a couple of diagnoses at once because the way of thinking is so different from culture to culture. That's why it is so important. If you work with people, you need to know not only your own kind, but everyone. There are people out there. There are at least 200 countries. They all live in a different way. Yep. But here in Sweden, we have a frame that if you leave that frame, there is something wrong with you, and we have to step in and do something. And this is, when they do that, that is a little bit more serious than it might look like in the first glance. But if you take a look at it the second time, what do you call it when you force people to think the same? I mean, it has happened in history before, and it's not a good idea.
That's right.
At all.
Yeah, that's right. So again, we're back to that idea. Okay, just because they lack the framework to put some of your ideas into context, like say, or how you choose to live your own life, from their perspective, then they might think that they are doing something right by putting maybe both you and obviously your son back into this frame of conformity in a sense that we're talking about here. So again, do you think that they are thinking that they're doing the right thing?
I really believe so, because there is no way that I can start a discussion, because if you start a discussion, if you leave the frame, the box, they have no answer. So When I start to talk about, you have complaints about colloidal gold and silver and neem tree and whatever we are using that is natural, well, let's discuss it a little. But they can't, because they don't know anything about it. It's just the norm.
That's a good point. They already know the parameters of what is scientifically proven and safe. And there's no real necessity or argumentation point of why they should maybe stretch or go anywhere further to try to either understand it or even verify if it's safe or not. But in a sense, if people don't understand these things, they unfortunately and most likely are going to look at them as that must be something bad. If this was something good that was applicable that more people were doing, then I would have heard about this by now. Speak to that. This is again about the homogenous quality of the society, the conformity that is there. It's so strong and so pervasive that it's difficult to explain this to someone who hasn't been here, visited here, or don't know the culture. What would you say? What would you say to that, Krista?
Yeah, I have tried to. First of all, I've traveled around some, so I know that whenever you come to a new country, there is a new feeling. And you learn so much. And we are tricked as well. It's not, well, many people are tricked perhaps, but if you look at Sweden, it looks kind of nice on the outside.
Some areas, yeah, but go ahead.
But when you start to mess around in the system, you find out that there is only so much knowledge about, to in this situation when you only have a frame of thinking within, and it's kind of Swedish, you want everybody around you to be Swedish, it feels like that. And for other people who have not been here, the thinking over here is mostly, if you do that, this might happen, so better not do it. It's also called statue, and in Swedish, författning, which is förutfattad mening, which is, I can state that what you're doing might be wrong in the future, but, I mean, in other countries, you have to prove that somebody does anything wrong, but over here we can only something wrong might happen, so we better step in.
Exactly,
right now.
It's preventive in a sense. It's pre-crime, as some of the rules that we're pushing through here in Sweden, you know, previously as well. When it comes to wiretapping and some of the other things, it's always about everything is preemptive. If you try to do this or that, you might, as you say, there might be trouble. So let's not do it. Let's not end up in that situation. It's for that reason also very much end up within the parameters of safety and security. And what I think most people don't understand with that line of thinking also comes a lot of problematic situations, because the so-called security or the comfort zone that you're trying to create is a disservice at the end of the day, in a sense, because it prevents you from even making a simple move, in a sense. You can't, you know, in that sense, operate within your life as you wish to do, because you're prevented by all these rules and regulations and forms to a certain degree, so that you can't. The playpen again is so tiny; it's very very small. So how? If we just for a moment go back to Dominic again, and maybe, you know, we can return to the subject later too, but what has happened consequently? Have you been able to see him? Have you been able to talk to him? When and if can you talk to him? What's happening, basically?
Well, first of all, we weren't allowed to see him at all at first, but it took a month or two, several weeks at least. Then we had a two-hour meeting in the social services office with a family, someone from the social services. And the first thing I started to ask questions about was, hey, if you're going to be here with us when we see each other, I know the drill, so I would like for you to know a little bit about trauma. But she said that that's not my work. Okay. And I saw, when she said that, I saw what's going to happen. And exactly that happened. I mean, they are trying to, you have to perform with perfection during these meetings. You are not to be sad or anything. You are not to have any traumas, no shock, no post-traumatic stress, no nothing. You have to perform perfect. Otherwise, they're going to complain at you. And that's exactly what they did. So from 1 hour every 5 weeks, 2 hours every 5 weeks, I believe, it went to 1 hour every, 1 hour every 5 weeks. I don't even remember. It was just less.
Yeah.
And they promised that you're going to visit Dominic in your home next time. So I thought, okay, we did something good. But then at the same time, we're not allowed to click pictures, we're not allowed to show emotions, we're not allowed to speak about the case, we're not allowed to do anything. And we had to play in this room, and we were not allowed to sit in windows, and don't drink that, and don't offer him ecological candy. And they just went on.
Jesus.
So they made a pretty good schedule what not to do. So it was more or less, can I look at my child? Is that okay?
Yeah.
So
how about that? Think about that. That is just amazing. I mean, psychologically speaking, this is not very sound. It's not very scientific. I mean, not the true science anyway. If we look at it from that perspective, we know that people are emotional creatures. They will obviously have to show this, have to express this, have to have some level of emotional you know, engagement in that sense in each other when something like this has happened. What kind of science, if any, do they even base this on? How what's the motivation here, in a sense?
Well, first of all, they don't have a clue about psychology, because I've studied, I had to study myself to get well. So speaking about mental issues or anything like that, they just can't. And
that's amazing. I thought there was more, sorry to interrupt, Krista, but I thought there was within this field of you know, sociologists and what have you, there's more psychology involved there's more understanding of those, you know, deeper processes of the human being, but you're saying not then?
No, no. I ask the most simple questions. There is no, either they don't know anything or they just don't care. Because to ask somebody to perform perfect when you took their child away from you, I mean, if we back up a little in history, just a few hundred years, you would not be so safe if you took somebody's child on these grounds. So the whole situation from start to end is, I believe the worst thing you can do to a family is to do what they're doing. Of course, people are sensitive and stuff like that. I've heard that there are social workers who say that you are too weak, you can't be a mother. And to that mother, they actually said, the social services in Gotland said that if you get a baby later on in life, we're going to take it away from you. And this child was taken herself by the social services when she was young. Her life is totally, totally destroyed.
Yeah. Mm. Another case. There are more cases that, like this, correct? Because you've obviously encountered some more of these now when you yourself unfortunately have ended up in this horrific situation. Do you have any idea of the amount of these cases that actually are out there? Because again, we come back to this problematic situation that Swedes don't talk about this kind of stuff. You put the lid on. This is not something you converse in. And if you do, it's just kind of depressing and you don't want to talk about these difficult things. You stay away from it. But the more and more we avoid these issues, the more and more difficult and pervasive they will become. But tell us about this. What do you think about the number of cases out there?
Ooh, I'm in contact with a lot of lawyers and I have a lot of mails in my inbox. And I would say that there are thousands of families every year who has to fight this fight. Maybe from the mother is talking too much in the phone to the dad was a little alcoholic or whatever. But in the end, it doesn't matter. I mean, we have built. This is everybody's responsibility. That's why it's so important to act yourself. Because if you take a child or if you take a dog or whatever and you let him do whatever he wants and he's always right, he's not going to be that very kind when he grows up.
That's right.
There is no balance. And the social services have always had the trust. No matter what they say, people always, oh, well, there must be something wrong with that family. Otherwise, they would never take the child. But I've been reading case files that I'm not joking. One case was about the mother is talking too much over the phone.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
Wow.
And I'm trying to understand this. What a social worker, what is happening in a head of a social worker? And the only thing I can observe the whole thing from the beginning and see that a few people have a little idea of that family looks a little different. So let's take all the papers and there are more people here than Swedish. So in Sweden, the social workers have the right to take any of your papers, even if you go to a private psychologist, I believe they can take those papers too.
Really? So there's no doctor patient confidentiality agreement?
I have not heard of of one in Sweden.
So
now we have a situation where a few people are a little bit worried and they take papers that they don't have education for, like from the social psychiatric clinic. They don't have that kind of education and they're going to look into something that they don't understand and they will choose the worst parts of all the journals and every bad thing that they can come up with. They will put that in a paper and then they go to the social board and then they tell you the board that this is Krister and this is Annie. So from the beginning, our entire image was filtered out by social workers who choose the worst things only, and the things that are not negative, they turn it negative.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have a social board that are scared to death almost by, oh my God, what are these parents look? Because that's the whole package, what you have done maybe for 10, 15 years, only bad parts and twisted by somebody who wants you to be bad. Then that paper is sent to court when the social services and social board agrees that this has to be we have to do something. And the court sees these papers and, oh my God, they all agree that these parents are so bad. And this happens in every case. And to finish up that, with just a simple thought, how long does it take to know someone? It takes years.
Yeah, that's right. So you're saying that one is basically one person that is responsible for putting this picture together that they then later present to the board there, basically, and then the board comes to the decision or not whether they should take your child. Is that how the flow goes, if you will?
Yeah, they decide if you want to go further with this, and if they want to go further, and they send the papers to court, and the court agrees to do whatever. That's what happens.
So, okay, I wanted to try to get to this question of homeschooling, though, and how much you think that this might have been part of the fact that the government took Dominic away from you. They kidnapped him. Is this the... Because we know that homeschooling was outlawed, if I can call it that, then in Sweden back in 2010, correct? There's a specific law that came in then. But before this, it was okay. And as I understand the timeline here, then this was right in that kind of cusp, right in that area. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was legal then. And as how I see it, it's still legal because you're not... you're not allowed to break anybody's rights with using statutes. I mean, you have to have a very good explanation that if you know that the parents are stupid, then maybe, I don't know, but I mean, it was legal, and as far as I can see it, there is still a little gap, because if there is a situation where homeschooling is a better choice, then it should be legal. That's what the law says today. The problem is that you are not to speak for yourself, because the lawyers will speak for you. So and then who knows best what a family decides other than the family itself?
Well, I agree with you 100%. But in the last couple of weeks, even, or maybe this was a couple of months ago now, actually, there was some. I think there was from Folkpartiet, Liberal Democrat, I guess would be the way to say it, to convey the party of in English, and they had some proposals and ideas where they continue this idea that it shouldn't be legal for homeschooling, because they argued that it was like they basically offer an inferior education, and it's interesting how, from my point of view anyway, they spin this. They also try to say that no, because this actually is a disservice towards the child, that, they don't get to go to regular or normal school where they get to interact with everybody else. In some cases, I've even heard weird ideas that, the parents, kind of bias ideas and stuff will get, like, incorporated into the child, and therefore they won't be, neutral in the sense that it's kind of politically correct to be now in Sweden. You should be neutral about everything. If you're opinionated or know what's going on, you're out the door. But in any regard, first of all, I don't think that there's any proof for this, but also it's interesting from my point of view to see that they are talking about this like school is the only thing that exists for a young child. They speak nothing about the fact that they can be out and play with other kids on the in the playground, in the yard, or in the wherever you live, what have you. It's like everything is confined around the educational system of the schooling, and that they have to go through this uniform education system, everybody, and that just and that's problematic to me. I'm just wondering why, what are they so afraid of? Do you think?